If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Bet you see some motorcycles out today. I don't know, convertibles. People, when, you know, it's 39 degrees in the summer, they say, oh my God, it's too cold, we can't do anything. But if you get a day like this the first week in January in Chicago, you're playing tennis. You're hitting golf balls today.
Oh yeah, short weather.
50 today, 35 tonight, 40 tomorrow and breezy, rainy on Monday, but 54, 39 at the lake right now. You like apples? How about them apples? I may go for a short-sleeved jog later on today, or ride my bike along the lake, or do something.
You're really in the active apparel, outdoorsy look today, huh?
I used some hair product last night that when I woke up this morning had my hair in kind of a post-apocalyptic sort of thing, and I didn't want to fix it, so I put a baseball cap on backwards and dropped 20 years. Boom, just like that.
You came in with your skateboard over your shoulder. And, what's up, fellow kids? I like it. It's a good look.
Only needed the white earbuds, and I would have dropped 30 years. Trying to look youthful.
Are those only for the youth? I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't wear baseball caps, and I don't wear jerseys with names on them. I don't do any of that stuff. I have to be talked into wearing sneakers. You know, I'm getting older by the day, I guess. Or I don't know. It's just my style. I don't even think it's age. It's just a style. That's my sense of self.
You'll wear jerseys without names, though?
Hardly even that. Although here's a confession. I did buy one of those Blackhawks winter classic jerseys from last weekend.
Those are sweet.
That was a great game. That's a great production. It's too bad the way it turned out. But, I mean, that was those are some awesome-looking uniforms the Blackhawks wore. The black with the white pinstriping. That was really nice.
Andy and I were talking about it leading up to the game. And, you know, the Blackhawks are in it so often, you kind of wonder if it loses its, you know, prodigy, how great it is. But then once the day comes, there's so much excitement. And you talk about the uniforms that they're wearing. It's just so cool, so unique.
And that was Doc Emmerich with the call, right?
Yes.
And he's so good. Oh. You know, I would listen to him do anything. So
read the dictionary.
I know. And then when there's fast-paced action, and we're spoiled here at WGN Radio because we have John Weideman doing play-by-play on our side, and he doesn't miss a beat. It's like Weideman read ahead and knew what's going to happen because they're European names. It's going lightning quick. They're changing on the fly. And Weideman just seems to understand every single thing that's happening and convey it perfectly. And Emmerich is that on TV. It's just a joy to listen to some of those guys talk.
But the cool thing about Emmerich, too, is he does kind of go with the old school radio description, even with his television call. Like he'll say every pass, he'll describe with different adjectives and words, which on TV you can take a step back and not do that. But when Emmerich does it, it's just so influential.
Plus, hockey is so quick that you almost the language almost helps. You know, where in baseball, that's a great thing about a baseball game. Baseball games sometimes they'll just sit there, and if they're good and if they're confident, they'll let 10 seconds lapse, and they don't have to say anything right now. You know, it's a ball game for crying out loud. Speaking of games, so the Bears are this weekend. I don't know if you guys know this, but the Bears are playing. And just to give you an indication of what a big deal this, to me, feels like is suddenly. I mean, all year long, I've been watching the Bears, you've been watching the Bears, and I don't know that I've always believed that the Bears were as good as maybe they are. Maybe they'll go to and win the Super Bowl this year. I know their defense is off the charts, but the offense and the quarterback have been a little suspect. And each week that we win, I go, huh? That's what I go. I go, yeah, what do you know? Well, That's my reaction to every single Bears win. And now that we're into the playoffs, I'm like, okay, to me, this is the moment of truth now, right? I mean, now we will see just how good you guys are.
I think that's a general reaction, though, too, because no one was expecting this.
Kind of that.
Right. So
on the Tribune's website right now, they have an article that's headlined 33 stories you must read about the Bears going into the playoffs. No, I'm not reading 33 stories about the Bears. I'm still like, What time are they on? That's the article I want to read. What time are they on?
Pretty liberal use of the word must. Must I?
Exactly. No, I don't know what I must read, but the only thing I think I have to know is what channel, what time is the game on Sunday? Has that been published? Do we have any way of finding out?
3:40.
3:40?
I think the story you must read, though, specifically, is that it's just a story that says they're good. They are good. I don't think you seem to want to dispute that.
Make it a controversy.
I mean, I'm not
are the Bears good? Give me a call.
I'm not making any predictions. No, I mean, anything can happen, but...
Yeah.
I just feel like, and I feel like a lot of Bears fans are like this. They're like the girlfriend that doesn't want to fall for the same guy again. Doesn't want to...
I've been down this road before.
Right, let your guard down.
Don't come at me with a good defense. I've been to good defense before, and she didn't show up. Or something.
They didn't text back.
Yes, that. The big story, of course, today in the city of Chicago, besides anticipating the Bears and everybody sitting down and reading 33 separate stories about the football game, is this Ed Burke story. Our news click at WGNradio.com, it's our daily web poll question, asks you, are you surprised? Do you guys want to guess what the percentage of people on the news click have said that they are surprised? You have two options. You know, Ed Burke's been charged by the feds with extortion, shaking down some people for campaign contributions for Tony Preckwinkle and others, blah, blah, blah. So the question is, are you surprised? What percentage have said they are surprised? What percent have said they are surprised? Griff, did you look at the news click? Do you know what's your guess on what percentage of our listeners are shocked to hear that Ed Burke, the 51-year Chicago City Councilman, has been charged with some violations?
I mean, it's definitely under 5%.
Yeah. You're in the neighborhood. It's 7. 7% of you are shocked. That might, and you know, that may be people accidentally clicking the wrong button.
I was going to say, who are they? Who are you?
People from Topeka. They don't know the scene.
Well, it's sad, but...
I think that's what it is. As much as it's a lot of things like, oh, duh, and angering and blah, 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 I just think it's a sad story. I still am curious what a day, what a moment, what this morning is like in the Burke household. His wife's an Illinois Supreme Court justice sworn in the same day that he was getting his office wallpapered by the feds so they could haul off computers and people wouldn't peek. I mean, what was that day like? How was your day, hon? Oh, I was a Supreme Court justice. How was your day? Funny you should ask. What every morning has been like since, including this 37-page document that details what the part of what they may have on him. I was reading Jason Meisner's story in the Tribune today. The FBI had Burke's cell phone tapped over at least an 8-month period. You know what's shocking about this? That it was 8 months. They say that usually when the FBI taps your phone, they'll tap it for 30 days. And that the process by which you go to tap someone's phone is actually pretty arduous. It's a lot of documentation to get a judge to sign off on it. You may think, oh, they'll just tap the guy's phone because you hear about phones being tapped, but you don't know what happened beforehand to get the phone tapped. It's a lengthy, arduous application process, and you have to demonstrate to a judge that you've got sufficient evidence that you not only will want to listen in on the guy's phone conversations, but that you cannot gather that information in other ways. So it takes work. And then after 30 days, you have to reapply all over again and demonstrate that you're still getting evidence of criminal activity. And to do that for 8 straight months, at least on its surface, is a quote-unquote indictment of the guy. Again, he's only charged. He's not been found guilty of anything. But they say that the feds have a near-perfect record on these sorts of things. All sorts of interesting things come out about this 37-page criminal complaint. That he had 23 guns, was it? A whole bunch of guns, some of them long guns. It's welcome to America. You get to own guns. I don't know why that's surprising, but it is a little bit. And maybe the saddest or dumbest thing about this, if he is guilty, is that the thing that they got him on tape for is shaking down a Burger King that wanted to get its driveway paved. There's a Burger King in his district that wants to get their driveway paved. The Sun-Times headline, Burger Sting. Anyway, so they want to get their driveway paved. And he saw, well, you know, that requires a permit. You know, I have a law firm here, and the law firm does permits and zoning and tax abatement. You guys should do business with my law firm. And when they didn't jump to that, I'm extrapolating now from the general reporting, then suddenly the application process slowed down. Oh. So then the guys from the Burger King go, oh, I get it. That's how you do business in Chicago. You want to get your business improved, you got to get a permit. You want to get a permit, you make a donation to somebody's campaign fund. Or you realize that the alderman has a private business and you should patronize the private business. You cannot be shocked if that's how business gets done, right? But it's such a silly, petty, tiny thing for somebody as wily as Alderman Burke, chairman of the Finance Committee, 50 years on the Chicago City Council. I mean, you know, it's sort of like Al Capone getting busted for income tax evasion or something like that. This, it would be ironic, considering all of the power this guy's wielded over the years, that something as simple as that could do him in.
But do you mean it's petty and tiny just in the specifics of this one call that it was a Burger King? Because it seems like, I'm sure he did this all the time. And, you know, it is, well, I mean, I'm not sure. I don't
right,
know.
No,
I guess
no,
we don't know. But
maybe this is the tip of the iceberg.
Almost certainly, right? I mean, yeah.
Right, because they probably wouldn't listen for 8 months.
Do you think he just decided, it's just like, no, this Burger King's the one, though, that I need to... Yeah. I mean, come on.
Well, that's... So I asked Christy McQuarrie, who's one of the editorial writers at the Tribune, yesterday about this, and a conservative columnist and a podcaster. She joins us in our Mincing Rascals. And I said, do you think there's more to this than that? And she and another guest said, well, you know, actually, if you're going to work on a case for 8 months... and tell us this much, you probably have more. You probably have more. I don't know if you have a reaction, something you want to say or text about this, but I'm just kind of wondering where your head is on this Ed Burke story today. My number is 312-981-7200. Just sound off a little bit. 312-981-7200. You can call or text. 39 degrees at the lakefront. 50 the high today. You see that sky you got? You get that all day long. 35 tonight, breezy, and 40 tomorrow, going to rain Monday. 54 on Monday. 39 now, going to get 11 degrees warmer. How about that? Mike, you're on WGN Radio. John Williams here. Oh, actually, I punched Tom, so Tom, you go first. Hi, Tom.
Hey, hi, John. What I was going to say was, you know, after, it's sort of like the lady out in Dixon, after, you know, you get away with something for like 20, in this case 50 years, yeah. You can justify it in your head that it's okay.
Maybe that's what happens. Maybe that's the psychology.
Yeah, you know, and you wonder why people are scratching their head wondering, I wonder if I should set up a business in Chicago. It's a little too, there's too much payoffs I have to do. So, bingo.
Yeah, you
Nobody
know,
comes into the city.
That's an interesting point, too, isn't it? I mean, as hard as we're all working to try and keep people and businesses, this doesn't help, does it?
Right. John Cass brought it up, and I thought, wow, that made a lot of sense. So, but great show, John. Great show.
Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you joining us. Yeah. Hey, Mike, it's your turn. Mike, you're on WGN Radio. Hi.
Hey, John. Listen, I just want to clarify and make sure everyone truly understands. Burke wasn't simply exporting a single Burger King operation for the money. That Burger King is owned by a large corporation that owns hundreds of Burger Kings. And Burke was extorting to get, you know, that money's donation. But he was looking for business, tax business, you know, everywhere for his company. So, and it's great that they've got all this on phone
tape. On tape, yeah.
Yeah, he's going down. I mean, listen, let me just make this other point, too. You know, the Burks have had a wonderful life, comfortable life, since the 60s in this city, and have really operated, you know, they've been enabled by the patronage system, basically. Ann Burke started out as a Ed Kelly patronage worker in the Park District back in the 60s. And, she didn't get elected to the Supreme Court. She was appointed. I don't know if you know the back story on that, but look into it. You know, I mean, so they've had quite a run. And if anybody wants to look at an example of political hacks operating with the patronage system and successfully so on and so on, I mean, take a look at the Burks. So anyway, What goes around comes around, I guess, eventually.
Right. Yeah, thanks for the phone call.
See you, John.
If all of that's true, this is the other thing that I say every time something like this happens. Like, didn't Rod Blagojevich know that three of the previous six governors went to jail? And then he was the fourth of the most recent seven when he went to jail? Don't the Burks, if Ed Burke was doing wrong things, don't they know that eventually you get caught and that that'll be the last thing people remember?
And maybe you go to jail, although that barely ever happens. And then maybe when you get there, people are constantly saying you should be let out. and maybe that's the last thing you heard about. And you're like, well, they're going to let me out anyway.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why Blagojevich is still in jail. And maybe why
probably for the best. Yeah.
The Burks should be nervous. Ed Burke should be nervous. I mean, he's not a young man. He's 70, I think, 5 years old. I think he's 75.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't know what the potential, I mean, this is also preliminary, but I wonder what the, you know, crimes that he would be charged with would be, what the sentencing would be, and how long somebody like that could go to jail. Because this would be a case where you say, okay, to the next generation of Alder people, we have to show you what will happen if we catch you, even if you're Ed Burke, and you're going to go to jail for a long time. And I think the public right now does have an appetite for that. It's 10:28. The News Click at WGNRadio.com and on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John. You surprised? One quick note from you, Don. Then Matt Rausch, the TV critic at TV Guide magazine, joins us. But Ed Burke said he was going to run again, right?
Yes, he did.
He's going to run for re-election, in other words.
That's right, yeah.
Do you have the soundbite from that? Are you able to play that audio clip for us real quick?
Sure, I got it right here.
I want you, my friends and supporters, to know that I fully intend to seek re-election.
That was posted on his Instagram account?
That's right, yesterday afternoon.
Breaking news, Ed Burke has an Instagram account?
I guess so, yeah.
Ed Burke is on Insta? Is he posting stories and doing stuff like that all the time? Is he hip to that scene? I didn't know that.
Me neither. This is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah. Well, he got the word out, and so he's resolute. Not only are these charges not going to stick, but by golly, and by the way, he would get reelected.
Yeah, I know.
That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works. I'll bet, you know, things in his ward run smoothly. Okay. Let's talk a little bit with Matt Rausch now. He is the senior critic over at TV Guide Insider, TV Guide Magazine, rather. Hey, Matt, how are you? It's John Williams. Welcome back.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Really good. I appreciate you giving us some time. I know that this is the Golden Globe weekend, and there's a lot of TV news out these days, so I thought I'd sort of tap you on the shoulder and see if you had a few things to say for us. Let's start there. Are you expecting much from the Golden Globe Awards, which are going to be Sunday night?
Well, you know, it's an unusual thing that that show has become such like a big deal because it's an odd little group, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. A lot of critics are quite skeptical about like just even who they are, let alone what they do. But the timing is such that they come out at the very start of the year. I think they've never been this early in January. Usually, I think they're the second weekend, so they're trying to get out in front of all the other award shows. And there is an amount of buzz. I like the fact that TV and movies are honored at the Golden Globes. The hosts are not typical hosts either. Maybe Andy Samberg, who's a comedian by trade. He won a few years ago for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. His co-host is Sandra Oh, a dramatic actress. She's nominated for the terrific spy thriller Killing Eve, which aired on BBC America. But what the Globes do like to do is reward new shows that have popped in the last year. So out of the drama and comedy categories, like nine of the 10 shows are first-time nominees, and seven of them are brand-new shows nominated for their first season. So something new is bound to win in one of the categories anyway. So it makes it kind of exciting that they're sort of acknowledging fresh shows, things that maybe the Emmys would overlook because they tend to go for, the same thing over and over. I mean, but this year, of course, there's no Veep again. Veep comes back for its final season later this year. An HBO show has won so many Emmys, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So it opened the door last year for Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which won the Globe last year as well. The Globes don't tend to repeat wins, but this year I think Marvelous Mrs. Maisel upcoming second season. Still just a delightful series. Came up toward the end of the year, right around Thanksgiving or whatever, and I think that it may still repeat win this year. But it's opposite really interesting shows like HBO's Barry, which starred Bill Hader as the hitman who'd rather be an actor. Netflix's The Kominsky Method, which had great star turns by Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin, both nominated. And then Showtime's Kidding, where Jim Carrey was playing sort of a twisted version of Mr. Rogers. So we'll see where that goes. And also The Good Place from NBC, yeah, nominated for the first time. But it's the only network show, broadcast network show, in either drama or comedy that's nominated this year. They even shut out This Is Us, which is the most popular drama of recent seasons from network television. The drama series are all new nominees. The Americans, nominated for the first time for its final season, a very highly acclaimed Russian spy thriller set in the 80s, only nominated now for the final season, and most of us feel that that final season was one of the best last seasons of anything. They shut out last year's winner, The Handmaid's Tale, and everything else is a brand new show. Bodyguard from Netflix, which was kind of like a 24 kind of a thriller. Homecoming, which starred Julia Roberts. The transgender drama on FX, Pose. And then Killing Eve, which I mentioned earlier, stars Sandra Oh, and a really fun series there, too. So it's kind of anybody's game, which makes the show a little more exciting, I think.
When you hear people talk about Bodyguard, they just get so animated about that six-episode season. It was really well done. It was really thrilling. It was fast-paced. Did you really like that series, Bodyguard?
Yeah, it was on my top 10 list, in part because it was so tight and so incredibly entertaining, and just, you know, by the end it was so off the rails. I mean, I don't know if you saw the final episode or not, but there's like a extended sequence where the main character is strapped to a bomb on the streets of London, and it just goes on and on and on. You're like, when is this ever going to be over? And some people thought it went over the top. I kind of respected the fact that the show didn't know where the top was, but I thought Richard Madden from Game of Thrones was just terrific playing this anguished PTSD suffering bodyguard to an unpopular politician, yeah, and the twist that the things took all through those six episodes. What I also liked about it being on Netflix was that it was only six episodes. Most Netflix shows wear out my patience. I think they're, most of them are too long, and the episodes are too long, and of course there's just way too much content on Netflix, so bravo to Bodyguard for actually popping out, because it's so hard for almost any show to get traction on that network, because they're throwing three or four shows out every single day or week, and so Bodyguard, which was a huge hit in the UK, it seems to have found its way in the US as well, and I think it's a real contender there. I'm kind of hoping the Americans will win, because it was such a great final season and deserves that kind of acknowledgement, but Bodyguard was lots of fun, I gotta say.
On the musical or comedy category, you mentioned The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. We've watched that from Amazon at my house, too. What a fun, interesting show, and funny she is. But also, what a fun show to look at. It reminds me of when we first discovered Mad Men, and you went, oh, I love the fashion, I love the clothes, I love the sets. It's a pretty show to watch at times.
Oh, it's a fantastic period piece. Sort of takes a rose-colored look at the late 50s. I think we're right on the cusp of 59, 1960 now in the show's life. And, of course, this season there was a little escapade that took us to Paris for an episode or two.
Yeah.
And then the summer in the Catskills had a little bit of a Breaking Bad vibe. Dirty Dancing vibe going on there. So, yeah, it's really fun to watch. Of course, it also acknowledges the sexism of the times in terms of the fact that she's trying to break into the male stand-up comedy world and facing a lot of obstacles. But it is sort of fun nostalgia, but it's also, you know, blue in its humor. So it's kind of the show that shows you, like the Mad Men did, how things might have really been at that time, because it isn't trying to be sugar-coated in its language or some of its other aspects. But boy, Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Mrs. Maisel, Midge, who's trying to break into stand-up, Alex Borstein, who plays her manager, Susie, and the scenes where she was in the Catskills just walking around with a plunger and everybody just thought she was working for the... Just all those things just made me laugh, and it's a delightful show, and we certainly need delightful shows at this time in our lives, and this was certainly one of them. So I think that if any show is likely to repeat at the Golden Globes, it'd be something like Mrs. Maisel, because that show is just really one of a kind. The dialogue is so much fun, written by Amy Sherman-Palladino, who was known previously for The Gilmore Girls.
Boy,
it's just really a great series.
Does that series sound like The Gilmore Girls, too, The Patter?
Well, sure, in many regards. I mean, she has a certain distinctive style when she writes for her characters, and just the banter that goes on between Midge and her family. Tony Shalhoub is her dad, and he's pretty terrific as well.
He's good.
The banter between Midge and her manager, all that's great. And I also think, like, Luke Kirby, who comes in every once in a while to play Lenny Bruce, he's amazing. I'd like to see a whole show about him.
Yeah, maybe they could spin that off. Lord knows that sort of thing happens. So those are the nominees, Best Television Series Musical or Comedy, and then Television Best Television Series Drama. Some of the things the folks will be looking for at the Golden Globes, and that'll be on NBC tomorrow night at 7 o'clock with Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg. By the way, this Masked Singer TV show feels to me like the Gong Show was when that first happened in the, what was it, 70s maybe? Just kind of silly craziness, but I want them to then take off the mask and it's Lady Gaga or somebody like that. Can you just talk about that show
in that first episode when they're going, could it be Lady Gaga? Could it be some other kind of superstar? Could it be Mariah Carey or whatever? It's like, no, it's not going to be that. They would not do that. They don't need to do that. Now, the show is absolutely ridiculous, which is what I guess some people wanted to see. It did. Fox was very smart putting it on the first Wednesday in January.
It won its night.
Opposite a bunch of repeats. Huh?
It won its night, right?
Oh, it got a huge number. Yeah, a huge number. I mean, and they've been promoting it for like forever, and it is clearly a novelty act of sorts, and people are rubbernecking. And, you know, that's a classic draw for reality TV. How outrageous can you go? How crazy can you get? And it does hark back to those days of Gong Show because it's outrageous and it's silly, and it's more guilty than pleasure, but it's definitely in that arena kind of a thing. But the number was really big, so we'll see whether it repeats this week. Because the reveal of Antonio Brown was a bit of a okay, you know. So we'll see how it goes on the second week when there's new people in new costumes, and we'll see what happens from here. But it definitely got attention, and in these days with so much clutter on television, getting attention is a good thing.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I guess it's not that important that the person who take the mask off be a famous person that we know, or a singer for that matter. Because when I heard who was revealed, I didn't know exactly who that was.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, then maybe this isn't the show for me because I'm not going to fall down and gasp because I don't know who the person is. So it was a little bit lost on me that way.
Yeah, well, to me, the big problem was the panel is lame. They're trying to tell jokes, and it's like, it's stupid. Jenny McCarthy just is not one of my favorite things. And so that just the whole idea that the show itself, I think, is junk. But then again, junk, there's a place for junk in television as well. There's as for quality. And in the world of reality TV, there's good, bad, and ugly. And the thing is, it made noise. And making noise is something that Fox needs to do as it goes through a transitional time. And this certainly was a success for them on one of the first nights of the new year.
By the way, producer Griffin and I were talking off the air. Maybe you can help me with this question, Griff, because I haven't seen this episode. But Black Mirror, right? Is that the one you were telling me about, Griff? Black Mirror
has
an interactive episode. Can you? What is that, and how did that work?
Well, it works that you can choose your own path as you watch this episode. Black Mirror has always been about technology. It's sort of a twilight zone of the dark side of technology. And in this story, you can follow it through by clicking along. This was one of those shows that over the holidays, and there's a tradition of this, where Netflix, and there was one cable show that did it as well, they just dropped the show on with no warning whatsoever. As of a week before that, nobody knew anything was coming. There was rumors that there was going to be a black episode, Black Mirror, either season or an episode, but it came on right between Christmas and the New Year, and it created a great deal of buzz because of its unusual aspect, where you can, at certain points of the story, you can click which way you want this thing to go, and the story will take you that way. You can watch it many different ways, and this is the Netflix model, of course, to try to just suck you in so you're not watching anything else in your life but Netflix. You can watch this one episode many, many times to get different outcomes. I just wish the story itself were more interesting, but I think that the aspect of playing out the story was kind of cool, if you're into that sort of a thing.
I don't even know what that sort of thing would look like. So is there a...
Well, yeah. At a certain point of the story, it says, click for this thing to happen or that thing to happen, and then the story goes off in that direction.
Huh.
No, it's weird. I know it's weird. I don't want I'd rather people actually tell me a story than me tell them the story. So,
well,
you know, it's not my favorite kind of storytelling, but it was innovative.
I could see at the very end of a movie or TV show say, I don't know, you know, do you want the hero to die valiantly or live, you know? I don't know. Maybe at the end we always debate how shows end or movies end, and we wish a certain ending went a certain way. But midstream, I'm like, I don't know what's a...
Yeah. Well, it's a tradition of pick your own adventure. You know, there's a literary tradition of that. There are books where you can, you know, send your heroes off in different directions and the story goes off in that way. But then you can go back and replay it and see how it goes when you go another way. So that is sort of the fun. There's already, you know, people who've watched every iteration of it and have figured it all out. Unfortunately, I have to watch about 100 TV shows in January, and I'm trying to figure out which I'm actually going to write about. So I only watched that show once, and it's like that was enough for me. Hmm. But I'm kind of old school in that way.
I wonder if this is a trend. Will they do this, or will other TV shows?
I hope not. No, please just tell me a story. Don't make me work to get the story to finish. So, you know, I will tell you, though, that coming up a week from Sunday is the new season of True Detective on HBO, and it's back to the form of the first season. It's really engrossing, really good. They've again found an actor who's at the top of his career. This is Mahershala Ali, and he's playing the lead detective here over three time periods, and it's a very complex, but it's also a really engrossing show, and thankfully, you just get to watch it. You don't have to tell him what to do.
Matt Rausch is on a phone line, the TV critic at TV Guide magazine. If you've got a question or comment, 312-981-7200. It's 10:51 on WGN Radio. We'll do the news in 9 minutes. Mike Pence is supposed to be meeting with Democrats in Washington, D.C. right now, working on the government shutdown. We've got the Bears game and details about that, and the Ed Burke story all coming your way in about 9 minutes, plus the forecast, which is more of what you got right now. Sunshine and 39, and we're looking for a high today of 50 degrees. I saw on somebody else's list, I've seen this actually show appear a couple of times, the Netflix show Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. Have you watched that, and should I look for that? Matt Rausch? Hold on a sec, Griff. It looks like he's on hold, and I'm going to put him back on the air. Hey, Matt, there you are. Now answer that question, Matt Rausch.
Yeah, you know, I hear good things about it too. I've sampled it, but you know, Netflix, the tonnage of Netflix, you really just can't watch everything, and I tend to veer more toward the scripted series than the unscripted. But they do have a very thriving subset of shows on Netflix that deal with food and enthusiasm for food, and this is one that sort of takes all the different four types of food and really just blows it out. The cooking show I like the best on Netflix is the one called Nailed It, which is a comedic show. It's a comedic competition where really inept bakers try to bake these spectacular creations, and it's kind of the flip side of the Great British Baking Show, which is everybody's addiction on Netflix. If you didn't watch it on PBS, people are completely hooked on the Great British Baking Show. But then Salt, Acid, Fat, Heat has its adherence as well. The thing with Netflix, though, is that the tonnage of content, it is almost impossible for everyone to see everything, and everyone's going to have their own particular favorites if they can find it. And I think that they do some of their shows a disservice by putting something out that's really worthy of attention, but by the next week there's another six shows out there screaming for your attention, and I don't think that sometimes it gives the shows enough time to really get the attention within the culture that they deserve. Sometimes a bodyguard happens, but sometimes a bodyguard gets lost.
Sharon's on WGN Radio. What show were you interested in asking him about? Sharon, you're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about the Starz series Outlander. I'm a huge fan of the show, huge fan of the books. I've read them all. Katrina Balfe is nominated again this year as the best actress. And I know as a fan, people wonder why Sam Heughan is always overlooked. You know, it just seems like many of us watch the show because of that character and his portrayal of the character. And I just wondered at your insight on that.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, the thing about TV right now, and if it had come at a different time, maybe if it were airing on HBO instead of Starz, I mean, it is a very popular show. It is to Starz what Game of Thrones is to HBO in terms of its public profile, its cult following. It doesn't have quite the numbers of Game of Thrones, but then again, neither does Starz. But I think that just the fact that it's a bit of an outlier, and the genre that it plays in with sort of romantic, historical fantasy, it's a time travel story, but it's also historical drama, and now the characters are in in pre-revolutionary America, colonial America, which is a really a fascinating change. I think the books are great, too. I think they absolutely sell it. But the truth is that the categories are so cluttered now. If you look at the ballot, especially like at Emmy time, there are hundreds of names in every category. And for Sam Heughan to pop out, it would be wonderful because he plays that role great. I'm kind of sorry that it didn't happen earlier in the run when the character was even more fascinating in the Scottish era of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have a feeling that it's just one of those where there's just too many candidates, and you know, and Katrina Balfe hasn't been nominated for an Emmy yet either. So it's nice that the Golden Globes pay attention to her because they take a more international aspect.
The chemistry that the two of them have on screen is really special, don't you think?
It is.
They work well together.
Absolutely.
And the sex scenes or the love, their relationship, it seems very believable to me.
And it's one of those things where they've really taken the books and they have adapted them quite faithfully and very passionately. And so the passion of the fans of the books has translated into the TV show. My sister gets stars on her tablet app. She doesn't subscribe to it except when Outlander is on. And that's the way that it works for some of these shows, especially on premium cable. It definitely has pleased the fans, but it's just one of those shows that kind of gets lost in the swamp of television. And it's unfortunate because it is a beautifully produced show.
Yeah, it is.
And those stars, like if you read the books, I mean, the passionate scenes are I mean, they sizzle there too, but on screen they're marvelous.
They work. I'm shocked sometimes at what I'm seeing. We've just finished the series, and it's pretty funny. Pre-revolutionary time, he catches a cab, if you will, a horse-drawn carriage with George Washington, and I'm like, I can have.
You know, there's a bit of Zelig in there too. You know,
there is. Thanks for the phone call, Sharon. Matt, we got maybe just a minute or two left here, and Josh had a question. You're on W. No. Do I have time for this, Griff? Griff says, okay, but make it short. Hey, Josh, jump in there. What was your question? You're on the air.
My question is, how are the ratings for live PD? Because I know if the ratings aren't good, Annie will take that show off the air.
The ratings are sensational for live PD. I don't know how many hours of that they have already run, but they are committed to many, many more hours of it. And I think I would not be surprised to see them spinning it off into other kind of formats. That particular kind of true crime show has really popped for A&E, and it's become a real franchise. So I wouldn't worry about that going away anytime soon.
Josh, thanks for the call. And Jim, what was your question or comment? You're on WGN.
My question is, Prison Break Season 6, is it going to happen?
Man, I don't know. I wouldn't hold your breath, but then again, Fox is in an unusual place right now, whether it end on Fox or someplace else, now that Disney's going to take over the studio. Really don't know. It could be one of those things gets lost in limbo. It took a long time for the last show to come on, so if there's still more story to tell, somebody might end up telling it, but right now I don't think it's on the immediate horizon.
Yeah, good questions, and Matt Rausch always has the answers, the TV critic at TV Guide magazine. Golden Globes are Sunday night at 7 on NBC, and there's always TV news. We'll call you again, Matt. We sure appreciate your time.
I always appreciate it, too, John. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, take care. Stay well. Stop talking, John. The news is next in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. The stories that matter on WGN. 43 degrees. Good job, January. Good job. First week almost in the books here, and the second week around the corner, rainy on Monday, but still warm temperatures, very warm temperatures. Guys, I feel so out of the loop. I literally today Googled, how do you pronounce the name of the Bears coach?
The Eagles secondary.
Because you hear it sometimes as Nagy, but it's N-A-G-Y. And I guess Nagy, is how you're supposed to pronounce it. Not Nagy and not Nagy. Joe, am I right about this?
Yeah, I mean, that's as far as I always thought it was. It's not that hard A. It's not Nag. It's not the Chicago Nag. It's Nagy.
Nagy. Nagy.
But you're not really breathing eh. You know, it's not Nagy.
All right, so here's Joe Brand with the name of the coach.
Matt Nagy.
Yeah. Was that Nagy or Nay? A lot of us, that's what I do a lot of times. When I'm not sure, I can actually incorporate four or five sounds into a sound and satisfy everybody. Nagy.
I'm sure I satisfied no one with that, but I also I think when you go with Nagy, that's the safe route.
Nagy is wrong. It's Nagy.
It's like trying to understand what he's saying on Bodyguard. If you have watched that show, he says mum.
Mam.
Mam.
Mum. Mum.
But it's not mum, but it's not ma'am. It is right in the middle. Mum.
It's weird, too, because as often as you're used to hearing, say, a bodyguard address his superiors as, yes, sir. Well, no, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But we're not that often exposed to somebody saying what the female equivalent of that would be.
Mum.
And then add to the fact that it's this British accent, mum, mum.
I can't watch it because I just get so fixated on being able to say, well, it's Scottish, too. He's Scottish.
Scottish.
And that's a, its own very specific thing, too.
Well, we were somewhere at a party or somewhere, and some guy said to some woman, thank you, mum. And we go, we know what you're watching. That's the tip.
We were visiting my friend in Dayton once and hanging out with Ohio people, and they were like, oh, you're Pot's friend. I'm like, Pot? Like, yeah, Pot's friend. I'm like, do you mean Pat? And he said, all of Pot's friends say I say Pot weird. I'm like, yeah, because his name is Pat. Pat.
So the Bears, the other thing I didn't know about our coach, we're about to do the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast here, but what's the boom thing? So is that the signature line for the coach?
Yeah, I guess signature might be a little hard, but yeah, Matt Nagy does this thing where he calls it club dub, and it's derived from what Joe Madden did with the celebration after every win, just to loosen things up and celebrate a victory. So the Bears do it after all their wins, and they call it club dub. They get the stream lights or, you know, the neon flashing lights. They blast music, and a lot of times Nagy will join in, and he'll do this little dance thing where he throws his fist back and says, all right, here it comes, and he slams down his fist, and everyone, and the whole team goes, boom! And that's kind of what they do.
So, on the opening kick, either when the kicker's foot hits the ball or when the their guy receives the ball, everybody's supposed to go boom.
I think for the kick is what Chase Daniel, the backup quarterback, wanted to get going.
Boom, here we come.
Yeah, and there was another article saying that they should do it every kickoff.
Well, these things are supposed to happen organically, and maybe this is. I mean, a player said it's a good idea. Maybe the fans will embrace it. But if it gets too orchestrated, then I think it's going to feel forced. So let's see what happens anyway.
But I feel like forcing it will eventually get the tradition to go.
Yeah, but there's some that do seem labored to me. For instance, what is the game where they'll say the ball's on the something yard line? No, timeout. And everybody goes, where? And then they say, on the field. Do they still do that at Bears games?
I haven't heard that one.
I've been to some football games where they do that. I go, I get the joke, but it's not that clever anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do this. The Mincing Rascals is the award-winning best podcast in the city of Chicago. It includes a bunch of folks, actually not a bunch of folks, a few folks from the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis, Eric Zorn, and from here at WGN Radio, Steve Bertrand and Justin Kaufman. Patty Vasquez joins us a lot. So we record it on Thursdays and post it usually Thursday around 5. And we talk about the national scene and the local scene as well. In this segment from Thursday's Mincing Rascals podcast, we'll start with Justin Kaufman, who's talking about the president's negotiation style as we enter the third week of the government shutdown.
I am always intrigued by the president's negotiation tactics because they're so chaotic. But by design, this president has, we've seen in the last 3 years, every single idea that he needs, or everything he needs to negotiate, he does it in such a kamikaze, chicken-like way. He wants you to believe that he's crazy enough to keep the government shut down forever. And he does it in a way that I think he's successful at it, because you want to play a hard line. Democrats don't want to give him any money, but they're like, he's crazy enough that he will keep it shut down. And I wonder if that works. It seems to be working maybe with China and trade. It seemed to be working, and obviously with what happened with Canada and Mexico. Will it happen with border security? I put my money that Trump will win.
In what ways is it working with China?
I mean, yeah, it's really
I'm
not.
My take on this is first of all, both parties have really locked themselves into positions of they're both seemingly intractable positions. Trump has said that he won't negotiate on this because then he would look foolish, is the quote that he said. I don't see Trump just caving. And the Democrats have put themselves into this very strong negotiating position. They're not going to give any money for the wall. They need to find some sort of a face-saving third way.
Who's they?
They, both parties together. They need, because both parties, their Democratic base voters are really, really firmly opposed to giving them any money for a new wall building. And the Republican base is going to go nuts if Trump blinks on that. So they're going to have to figure out some way where they can say, well, we're going to give, you know, $10 billion to a whole bunch of different border security things, but it's not going to be the wall, but it's going to be an electronic wall. It's going to have to be some sort of verbal gymnastics. It's going to save Trump's, because he won't back away from this. The president's negotiations are schizophrenic. He'll say, "I can negotiate. We're going to compromise on this," and then he'll say in front of some MAGA crowd, "No negotiation. We need the wall." How do you negotiate with someone who's
That's why I quibble with the word tactics. I don't think he thinks tactically.
Yeah, but he ran on the idea that he's a businessman who's good at negotiation.
But he's not. And I, you know, I don't even know that he was a good businessman. Isn't it evident that he's not a good negotiator in that he's put the Democrats in a position where if they even talk to him, they lose face? If you were manipulative, if you were clever, you would have sweetened the deal somehow. You would have said nice things about him.
They had a deal. Remember, long ago was it where they had a deal?
Had something on the table. Durbin talked about it.
With DACA, yeah. And they were going to do
the Senate signed off on it. They were set to go.
And Trump just said, no way. I'm totally on board with the idea that he's not a very good negotiator, that he is a bully, and that bullying has worked to some degree in the New York real estate market, but it doesn't work in politics.
Oh, it works pretty well.
It really does. This is Bruce Rauner thought it was going to work.
But Bruce Rauner's not a bully.
The rhetoric works, but the negotiating tactic, what has he successfully negotiated in 2 years?
Well, as you both of you guys scoffed at China, I will say that his concept, the concept was he wanted to go in and changed the way we do business with China because he felt like the United States is getting ripped off. So he goes in and he is playing a game. It's a dangerous game, but it's a game of financial chicken where he is running at the, and it kind of reminds me of the scene in Footloose where they're on the tractors and they're going at each other.
Oh, yeah,
and Kevin
right.
Bacon's foot is caught. But then they're like, man, this guy's crazy. So he jumps off and he actually wins. I feel like Trump's foot is caught. Like he's caught between all of the party's power and the
influence. It's so damn long.
But China and others, and I think Democrats in this case, just don't know if this dude's crazy enough to be like to plow in, to actually have that moment in the game of chicken where you collide with each other. Trump is, I've been watching over and over and over how he dealt with Europe and the EU and how he deals with the G7 and NATO, how he's dealt with China. I'm so crazy, you don't know what I'm going to do, so let's settle.
In this instance, I think there is a tactic here, and that is he doesn't back down. What is it? 25% of the government's shut down. So not, it's annoying to some people, and NPR runs stories about, you know, someone who can't get their passport or something. But for the most part, it's not impacting people that much. And so he can stay the course. And this is I think this is a brilliant move on his part. Because at the end of the day, if he wins, even nominally wins this, he said, I stood tough against the Democrats. I won, winning.
I think that's why they won't cave either, though. CBS ran a story, and they're looking for the impact.
Yeah, so far the stories have been like, there's trash overflowing the bins in the national parks.
A couple couldn't get married at a national park. Somebody couldn't get their marriage license.
Newlywed Christina Cruz wants to change her name before her honeymoon.
Were you planning on doing that anytime soon?
Yeah. It was going to be in the next few days. So.
Wow.
These are all annoyances and inconveniences. There's two kinds of employment, though, in the world, right? 100% and 0%. If you're in the 20% that's not getting a paycheck, this is very real. It's 800,000. 800,000 families are missing a paycheck.
Right.
And that's 20-25% of the federal workforce,
and
which
makes
me think we have a bloated federal workforce.
I imagine a lot of them can survive one or two missed paychecks, but they're not going to be able to survive a couple of months.
How many
paychecks.
Of you guys would like to miss a paycheck at Christmas time?
Most families probably survive, like I said, one paycheck, maybe two, especially given that most of these people are going to get paid eventually. But at some point, when they're just not getting paid at all, then you're going to really start to feel some economic reverberations that are going to be serious. The question then becomes which party, which person, which group of people pays the price? Which one is the public going to take it out on? Right now, I think that the Democrats are winning the public relations war.
I do, too.
The people who are only paying a little bit of attention to this go, well, the Democrats had a bill that they passed to open up the government, and the Republicans said, no, they want their wall. Wah, wah, wah.
What's the matter, Scott?
The people aren't paying attention. What people pay attention to is the soundbite and the image, and their image of the people who are leaning towards wanting the wall, which is a winner because it polls very well.
The wall does not poll well. Wait.
It polls very well with his base.
With his base.
Okay. That's all.
And Republicans are 80% of them want this thing to happen.
Right.
He's playing to them. He's playing tough. I mean, I think he's winning this.
I truly believe that as you saw, and I think that the president knows this, the tweet, this is just the Democrats' way to politicize this so they can win in 2020.
He's recognizing
that there is at least the idea that there could be political fallout for him.
That's why I think the Democrats are actually in the driver's seat.
I think they're in the driver's seat, too.
And I think they can hold their breath just as long as him. Look, we all have the video of him telling Schumer, I'll own this thing. It'll be on me. It is on him. And it is, by extension, on the Republicans as well. I mean, they're waiting for him to greenlight something that they will agree to. It's not the other way around.
And where's his base going to go, honest to God? I mean, they need him for this next Supreme Court vacancy, which may come up soon. The thing that ought to just be infuriating to his supporters is that he said over and over and over again that Mexico would pay for this war.
Who's going to pay for the war? Who's going to pay for the wall?
Now he's asking taxpayers to pay for the wall.
If we get the trade deal with Mexico, if it actually passes the Congress, then we'll somehow capture more revenue, and that will offset the cost of the wall. If that happens, and we somehow capture more money from Mexico, that's your money. That's the American taxpayers' money. Now, we could take the money from you taxpayers and build the wall, but that's not Mexico paying for the wall.
Is there any way that a Republican base would accept a Democrat compromise?
Well, they did. I mean, they did last month. They had a compromise all worked.
No, but I mean, not the Republican senators and congressmen. I'm talking about the Republican base. Would a Republican voter say, "Yeah, Democrats did a good job. $3 billion is okay, then $5 billion."
What's the Republican base? Define that.
Scott. I don't mean it in a negative way. Would a voter say, "Yeah, you know, the Democrats came through for us"?
Thank you, Justin Kaufman. Thank you, Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. You heard him, too. And Eric Zorn, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Steve Bertrand normally joins us, wasn't able to this week. Patty Vasquez is in the mix usually, too. Elif Garris produces The Mincing Rascals. And you can get that for free wherever you listen to finer podcasts. We post it at WGNradio.com. It's always linked on my Facebook page as well. Listen for The Mincing Rascals. The guys had a fun conversation, too, about the underground pedway system in Chicago. The underground pedway system in Chicago. Are you familiar with that? The Mincing Rascals. It's 11:24 on WGN. This is John Williams. By the way, just one other note about the Mincing Rascals. We post a video that we make when we usually record it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. We also post the news click there. The news click is asking you today, are you shocked to hear that Alderman Ed Burke has been charged with several criminal things? I don't want to let the language get in the way here. I believe it's a criminal complaint, a 37-page criminal complaint. We asked you how shocked you are by all of that. And one other note about my Facebook page, and that is I interviewed yesterday a guy from faircompare.com, and he talked about how you when the best day and time is to buy airplane tickets. If you're going to do some traveling, when's the best time to buy the ticket? And when's the best time to travel? And it's kind of fascinating what some of the tips are and strategies are. I always thought the further out you bought the ticket, the better your chances were of getting a rate. But he said, no, there's about a 60-day sweet spot. You don't want to be too close. You don't want to be too far. And then there are certain days of the week. He said Tuesdays at 10 a.m. is the best time to look for fares. All of those details are posted on my Facebook page. And then at the end of that post, there are links to the two trips that Brenda and I are leading WGN radio listeners on this spring and summer. We're going with Steve Bertrand Travel to London and then Scotland on April 26th and July 30th. We'd love for you to come with us to France. We'll spend two nights in Paris, and then we'll spend 6 days going up and down the River Seine to Normandy on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. I get goosebumps just thinking about that. Links to both of those trips are all in that Facebook post. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. I want to let the president get in the last word, by the way. So the Mincing Rascals we're talking about, who's going to blink first, the Democrats or Donald Trump and the Republicans? And at the Rose Garden press conference yesterday, which I think just wrapped up, these things are epic. They're must-see TV. One of the reporters stood and asked him very specifically about that notion that Mexico will pay for the wall. Let's let the president get his last word in on this.
You ran your campaign promising supporters that Mexico is going to pay for the wall and that the wall was going to be made of concrete. You just said earlier that the wall could be made of steel, and right now our government is shut down over a demand from your administration that the American taxpayer pay for the wall. So how can you say you're not failing on that promise to your supporters?
Very nice question, so beautifully asked. I just told you that we just made a trade deal, and we will take in billions and billions of dollars, far more than the cost of the wall. The wall is peanuts compared to what the value of this trade deal is to the United States. As far as concrete, I said I was going to build a wall. I never said, I'm going to build the concrete. I said I'm going to build a wall.
You said concrete.
Just so you don't, because I know you're not into the construction business, you don't understand something. We now have a great steel business that's rebuilt in the United States.
That's him, president, explaining not only the financing, but also the construction of the wall. And he said steel would be better. The gaps would enable each side to see through, which is valuable to law enforcement on this side. So he said it's a better idea. It's better construction. And Mexico will pay for it with the better trade deal. And this will be peanuts, the president's last words on that. It's 11:28. Let's go into the WGN Radio newsroom. Don Kleppen has the latest on those negotiations. Oh, I said I was going to take a break here, right, Griff? I'm looking at you, Griff, and I do or don't take a break. I do take a break. Good. Don will have the latest coming up on WGN. For the news, this is John Williams, and producer Griffin Saturdays at this time introduces us to a song. Last week, Don complained that we didn't hear enough of the song to actually rate it or get a feel for it. So how are we doing there, Don Kleppen?
This one's good, and that was enough length for me to render a judgment. I give it, this one's an 82 for me.
82?
Mm-hmm.
We rate the songs on a scale of 1 to 100. By the way, what were we listening to there, producer Griff?
That was a song called Love It If We Made It by a band called The 1975.
I'm happy about that. I love discovering new music in bands and names of bands that I don't know. 1975's been around for a while.
Yeah, this is their
maybe 43 years.
Third album, I think, came out in November. It's called A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships. It's a mouthful, and it's a pretty annoying album name, I think. They have a lot of like garishly long and facetious, just annoying names.
Pretentious, maybe.
I don't like to use that word sparingly if I can, but,
okay.
It's
but
such
yes.
a pretentious thing to do.
I know we were all thinking that at home. Thanks for hitting that button, Joe Brand.
I've never been guilty of any kind of pretension, never in my life. But it's true. But when the songs are good, it doesn't really matter, and I think this is a good song.
I was with Don. I'm an 82. Joe Brand, what did you think about that song?
I'm okay with it.
It was fine.
Yeah, the band name actually gave me the idea to give it a 75.
Oh, nice!
Nice.
Nice!
Fitting.
You could give it a 1,975.
That's true. I could, but then I wouldn't be complying by the rules that seem to fluctuate every week.
Yeah, we've never been known to bend the rules. Yeah, if you listen to the whole song, a lot of the lyrics that are drawn from current events, like very current events in later in the song. I couldn't play too much further because it gets a little explicit, but he quotes Donald Trump a couple times. He quotes a Trump tweet where he said, "Thank you, Kanye, very cool."
Yeah.
That's one of the lines. Just, "Thank you, Kanye, very cool."
He drops that in there?
He does. He also says, "I moved on her like a..."
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
There's a million other references to other things, not just the president, so it's of the moment in a way that rock bands have not been for the last 10 years, or at least people feel that way a little bit. It's cool to have a band that's relevant as opposed to a pop star, rapper, which usually speak to the moment a little better.
And the name of the band is The 1975?
The 1975.
The 1975.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of Kanye West, he and Kim Kardashian are expecting their fourth via a surrogate. And I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions for them for the name for their fourth child. We have North, we have Chicago, and we have Saint. Anybody want to take a crack at that? Anybody got any good ideas?
Polaris.
Polaris is nice. Sure. By the way, as much as
Steve.
It's...
Steve. Fine. That is a gimme. Come on.
I know, but I think that the first three names are solid names. I love the name Chicago.
Yeah.
Saints been done. That's a fine and, you know,
has
ordinary.
Has it been done? Do you know a lot of Saints? People just named Saint?
Okay, I don't know anybody named Saint, but does that strike you? Given who the parents are, does Saint seem off the rail to you?
No, but just to say it's been done, look. It just also struck me as funny.
And then what was the other one?
North,
which to me was always just kind of a wink. I liked that name. Now, if the next
Northwest
kid
is great.
Southeast or something, then we've, you know, jumped the shark on that. But I'm championing their first three, and I have confidence they're going to come through with a unique but not ridiculous name. That's my prediction.
I like the names too.
I think that's fair because. You bring up the Chicago name, and I feel like, oh, you know, you never hear someone's name Chicago, but how many Dallases are there out there in the world? And I guess that's it.
Well, Brooklyn, that's a name, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Washington.
You know, last sometimes name, you name the child after where the child was born or a city that's important to the two of you or where the child was conceived. That happens as well.
And I have a friend named Buick.
Well, you're just killing over there in sports, Joe Brand. You're going to step out. All right, so no suggestions, I guess, for a name for their kid. But
I gave you Steve. What do you want? Well, keep going. I've got more.
No, that's
Gary.
That's fine.
Hey, and another location,
another
name
city.
Too.
Yeah.
How about Buster Scruggs is the name? I want to give you guys a recommendation. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is actually a 6-part series that essentially is a movie in 6 chapters, all of them somewhat connected. It's a Netflix film, technically. And if you have not watched The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, it is wild. It is a sociopathic singing cowboy that wears a white hat in the first installment, the first episode, if you will. And it's hilarious, and it's shocking, and it's unlike anything you've seen before. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Well, that particular chapter is hilarious and shocking. And then it
goes all over the place.
Yes.
Did you watch it too, Don?
I did, yeah. I liked it.
Did you like it as much as I did? I mean, it's not going to be for everybody.
Yeah, it's a Coen Brothers thing. You know, their style is, it doesn't hit everybody, but their movies like Burn After Reading and No Country for Old Men, if you like those things, you'll like The Ballad of Buster Scruggs for sure.
I think so. But they do have a very specific sensibility and themes, where their themes tend to be nothing matters and life is pointless.
Right, no resolution.
That's how they usually come down on things.
Well, these are some sad episodes.
Absolutely, but they also span a bunch of different tones while also being unmistakably like them. So the first one is slapstick, violent. Some people have compared the character Buster Scruggs to like Bugs Bunny, which I think is totally accurate.
That's but true.
It's really wordy and funny too, which, I mean, they can write the heck out of a script. And then they are increasingly sad as it goes on from there. The next and slow and pensive and.
And you don't know where they're going to go. You have no idea what they're going to do with the scenes.
By the last one, it's almost gothic. That carriage ride is creepy and feels like something that Edgar Allan Poe could have written. So
I kind of felt like the first chapter felt like the end of a movie, whereas the last chapter felt like the beginning of one.
Oh, and
like two different movies, though.
Well, and they play a lot with like circle imagery, not just in this movie, but in a lot of their movies. So.
This is Netflix, and it's called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. That's my recommendation this week. Griff, you got anything for us?
Come back to me. What do you guys got?
You gave us the song. How about you, Joe Brand?
I finally feel like I have something to, you know, something theatrical to actually provide to this segment. I watched a movie. It isn't the newest movie. It came out in 2016. I'm sure, Griff, you saw it. Arrival with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner and Forest Whitaker. I liked it. I didn't love it, but I did like it. I thought the plot was good. I felt like you could really relate to the whole idea of aliens coming down and... they show their
language.
Their method of communication, and then it just goes viral. You know, I see like internet memes of these circle things, like I'm talking to my girlfriend, and this is what she replies. Like, you know, no one understands something like that. Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of felt like if this were to happen, something like that, You know, I enjoyed it though. It was,
I thought that was so clever. I mean, how would we talk to aliens if they came here? You know, they're not going to say take us to your leader. And then you had the musical sort of language that you had from E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind would be, you know, light or music, which is kind of universal. But this language, I forget what they called it, but I just thought it was so fascinating.
And it's kind of an aspect that no one's ever gone down with sci-fi movies of, you know, oh, what will we do when aliens get here and just assume that everyone talks the same. You know,
that's
something no one ever really went into, a very different territory. I also like one of our texters for recommending Kanye West's next child, Wild West.
Nice.
I like that a lot.
Or maybe in the middle name, Wild. Wild Wild West.
You put it in my head, and I'm extremely partial to Buster Scruggs West. I can't get that out of my head. Arrival, I remember, came out like the week of or the week after the election. And I remember that was like the first movie I saw after the election. That'll always be in my head.
You had that time stamp, and then the world changed a little bit.
Yep.
Don Kleppen, what are you recommending this week?
Also a Netflix movie, but it's also out in theaters, I believe. It's the Mowgli, The Legend of the Jungle. It's you know, another telling of The Jungle Book, but it's much more adult. It's much more true to the original writing of Rudyard Kipling. Andy Serkis directed it. He also voices Baloo. Christian Bale voices Bagheera. Kate Blanchett, I believe, voices Ka, and then Benedict Cumberbatch is Shere Khan. And it's a lot more adult. They talk about the themes of like the jungle having a spirit and desires, and like the whole tale of Mowgli, like this, you know, human boy raised by wolves. It's always, I think, going to be fascinating, but this telling of the story is a lot just darker compared to, you know, the Disney tellings of it. And I enjoyed it very much. It has like a little bit of a haunting feel. Some of the themes stick with you. It was unexpectedly very good.
I just watched a version of The Jungle Book on TV the other day, not the original cartoon one. I'm wondering if that was the one that I saw.
I know Disney did another live-action one a few years ago with Jon Favreau directing, right, and Bill Murray was Baloo, I think. And
yeah, that's the one I saw.
Yep. Yeah, right. that definitely, and I know it's like it is confusing because of how many iterations there are of it, but this one should be in theaters now and then on Netflix as well, and it's just Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle. Solid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll just throw in a quick recommendation for a movie called Support the Girls. It's now on Hulu. It came out last year. Now on Hulu, and you can watch it there. It made Barack Obama's 10 best, or however many best of the year.
Yeah, he had more than 10, but that's whatever.
It also made my favorites of the year, too. It's about Regina Hall, who's getting some buzz for nominations for this and that, but I think this movie's much too small and good to make much of a stir. But she's amazing as the manager of a restaurant called Double Whammies, which is like a Hooters style restaurant, but it's not a chain. It's just one. It's like locally owned. But it's this kind of place. And it's just a day of her job. You follow her around working that day.
Double Whammies.
At Double Whammies. But the movie is called Support the Girls. And it's really, really good.
Huh. Okay, it's now 11:48 on WGN. Oh, there's one other story that I was just going to bounce off you guys. We got a minute here. Let me just get to it real quick. I don't know if you paid any attention to this, Joe, but it's in Springfield, I think Missouri. Did you follow the story of the Dora High School basketball team? They had triplets on the team. And in the holiday tournament, Dora was in the championship game. Two of the triplets, they're identical, were on the floor at the same time. One of them got fouled at a critical moment going up for a rebound. And when they went to the line, his twin brother went to the free throw line to shoot the free throws because he's a better shooter. Nobody caught it until afterwards when the parents of the other team were watching their videos. And they go, wait a minute. That's the wrong twin,
wow,
or triplet in this case. And he made the free throws. They won by 2 points. So the question is, what do you do about that? And is that really cheating?
Yikes.
How do you feel about that? And, you know, there's a lot of times where in sports, if you can get away with it, You do. It's not really cheating unless the umpire or referee calls it or catches it. Otherwise, it's just trickery. It's just you being cleverer than the game.
I mean, that's the whole reason they have numbers. So it's actually pretty surprising that the referees didn't catch on, because that's normally what they do, foul on number 11, on number 32,
right.
Go
but
to the
you
line.
Can imagine in the scrum of things, and they may have actually called out number 13 did the foul, but yeah. Then they look at the kid goes to the line, oh, it's the kid, you see the face. And he shoots the shots, he makes them, they win by 2 points. This is interesting. The triplet who was fouled but chose not to shoot walked over to the sideline and just was, you know, casually chatting with the coach. Nothing going on over here. Don't worry about me. I'm not the guy. The coach is his father. And if you wanted to complain to the administration of that school, the coach is also the principal. So the dad, father, coach is totally on board. And in fact, parents of other schools have said, oh yeah, they do this. This is not the first time it's happened. The triplet who can shoot the free throws best will toe up to the line.
And he also happened to be the lead officiate of the crew.
No, I draw the line there. But I mean, the more you think about that, you go, well, that's an outrage. That's terrible. But how many instances in sports will you get away with it if you can? If, for instance, the ball's knocked out of bounds, who hit it? Was it Joe or was it John? Well, Joe and John know what the answer to that is. And if they say Joe hit it out, but we both know that John hit it out, John's not going to volunteer and go, hey, guys, I feel terrible about this, but it was me. No, you never do that. And yet you know that you were the one that knocked the ball out of bounds. But the truth is whatever the official says. And so if the official, similarly, doesn't catch somebody going to the line and you can get away with it. You've seen this before when they aren't identical twins or triplets at a line anyway. Sometimes a kid will go up there and they go, hey, no. It's Bob over here that's going to shoot the free throw. Think about instances where there's the phantom tag in baseball at second base. Those two guys know what the outcome of that play was, but they're each going to argue their case. Think about people that take flops in the NBA. Those are embarrassing sometimes. And if you can trick the umpire, then you're the referee, then you trick him and you take advantage of the situation.
But then the unfortunate thing is now, like, the parents are starting to get involved in this trickery. And the fact that it hasn't happened, or this isn't the first time it's happened, just makes it so skeptical. I love the third headline that popped up when I Googled it while you were talking about it. Dora the Exploiter?
I feel like on this segment we're always talking circles around this fundamental idea, which is that lying is wrong. We're constantly finding ways to but wait, it's a game. There are rules, and if they can't find it, it's like,
it's a game, there are rules.
In professional sports, I feel maybe differently, but this is, like you said, the parents being involved makes it creepy. And like, what are you trying to learn from playing high school athletic or whatever level this is?
Well, yeah, high school. It's high school. Yeah, I suppose it's a varsity game. It was a tournament.
I don't like it at all. Yeah, I don't really like the strategy of it. Like, if it happened, if it just happened that way,
or if a kid just once took advantage of the situation. But this does seem to be a little top down, doesn't it?
Oh yes.
I mean, it's the adults that are making this.
I highly doubt he said, brought the team in into a huddle and said, okay, guys, listen, if Jim gets fouled, we're really going to send Jerry to the line.
Oh, this sort of smells like that to me. There was an official in the stands, and after reviewing the video, he said that in this game, it may have happened 4 times.
Oh, my goodness.
I they do wear numbers. I'm not exactly sure upon what he's basing that observation, but he said that it happened several times, possibly in that game, and then parents from other schools go, oh, yeah, that's what the Dora boys do. They send the best one to the free throw line.
I mean, once you get caught, wouldn't you just want to stop rather than being known as...
the cheating school?
Yes.
I don't think the burden of proof is on the accuser here. I feel like once it's been spotted once, you can say, well, but it didn't happen that many times. I think if somebody says it happened 4 times, then I'm inclined to believe
I'm not going
to
lie. I like the creativity a little bit.
There's a little bit of
just
that,
a little bit.
Cleverness to it. But yeah, I think once you're caught, you have to own it and you have to not do it anymore.
Right.
I don't know that the coach needs to be fired over this. I think the shame is probably pretty good punishment.
Well, jail for him.
No, the ironic thing is he's got a twin brother, and he'll just say it was him the whole time.
The You know, speaking of instances where adults have failed the athletes, when you think last week about the story that had a lot of, you know, a lot of talk about the wrestler who had to get his dreadlocks cut because his hair was too long to wrestle in the match, my take on that was that the people who really failed there, everybody's mad at the official because the referee, he made him cut his hair. But where are the other adults in the room? Why didn't somebody say, hey, wait a minute, we'll forfeit this match if we have to. We're not going to make this young man cut his hair. His coach could have said that. The other coach could have said that. Anybody could have intervened and said, let's just throw out this match. It's not worth cutting this young man's long and prideful hair. It's not that important. The team that that young man wrestled for won that wrestling match by like 15 points. It didn't come down to one, weight class in that match.
Didn't it come out later that that wasn't truly a rule?
About the hair, that he could have had his hair
yes.
that long? My understanding is this, that in that case, that young man was able to wrestle with that hair in previous matches. The officials always looked the other way, but that there is a rule that you have to have it in a sort of, if this was in Illinois, an IHSA-sanctioned hair net that snaps onto his
headpiece,
or his headpiece, something. There's an appropriate piece of gear, and they didn't have it. Technically, the official okay. may have been in the right, but he could have looked the other way like everybody else. But whatever that is, his coach could have just said, hey, this is not that important. It's a high school wrestling match. Let's let this one go. And they did not.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to look at that story and say, hey, the coach should have acted differently. Man, that's tough. Because I feel like that's the same type of goal it takes for the official to keep your foot down in that instance and say, no, this is the rule that we're going to follow. I mean, it takes the same for the coach to be like, hey, this matters more to me than, winning this match.
Yeah, somebody could have intervened, and I think it was wrong to ask that young man in the heat of the moment. He had like 90 seconds to decide.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Put it all on him. Amy Guth's in the other side of the glass visiting with producer Griffin. She's got her show ready right around the corner. They'll be talking business, specifically what, in just a minute. Also, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. By the way, Amy, a text has just poured in. It's from my wife. It says, that is so cheating. Shame on that dad.
Yeah.
I don't think I said that on the radio, but I certainly want to mirror my wife's sentiment on this. I get so involved in playing the advocate or devil's advocate in this case that maybe I didn't say what I also think. And I understand everything I said. I mean, right. I can see how you could justify it. But yeah, what a stupid thing to do. It's a high school basketball game.
Oh, yeah. That's a fascinating story.
Stop it already.
Triplets and their trickery there.
How about that?
So interesting.
Well, sometimes twins have, you know, taken tests for each other in school or dated the other girl or I didn't know, whatever. There's a lot of famous stories of identical twins doing that.
Sure.
But seldom is the father the marionette, you know, playing the strings.
Encouraging it all. I know. I think multiples are so interesting. A friend of mine has little twins that are so identical that she has to look at both of them to tell which is
really?
Which.
Really?
So she started painting their toenails
How
babies.
Old are these kids?
Now there are two.
Is she able to discern them more easily now, or it's still kind of difficult?
It's still kind of difficult. If they're both just standing there not talking, it's really hard to tell. Their personalities are a little different, but she paints their toenails different colors, and that's how she... But then she'll write a note to herself, like, this one red, this one pink. So she'll remember, but they're very funny. They play tricks on her all the time.
What are you doing today?
So today, we are going to be taking a look at, you know, the Square app a lot of small businesses use. It's a little white, little square on top of smartphones. Well, they're getting into the banking game. So Square is owned by Twitter, and they're getting into the small business loan game. And so a lot of small businesses are taking out smaller loans and then they maybe not, you know, that they couldn't get from a bank. So we're going to take a look at that because that's an interesting space. And a lot of financial apps are popping up. And I think there's kind of it's an interesting time for them. So we're going to be taking a look at that. And we're also going to be taking a look at a piece in Bloomberg about Cynthia Marshall, the new CEO of the Dallas Mavericks. She's coming in on the heels of a lot of, culture change. She needs to do a lot. She needs to move the needle a lot after a lot of sexual harassment and enabling and that kind of thing was uncovered. So she's got, a lot ahead. But so we're really going to be taking a look at what it means to change culture like that. So lots to do.